This is ABC Radio Brisbane with Steve Austin.
When you talk about fake news, the biggest difference is it never tells you that it is fake news.
Meet Australian Test cricket idol, Richie Beno.
Hi there, just enjoying some ice. Marvellous what a difference it makes to keep you in top form.
The absolute fundamental that we've spoken about before. Who is the customer?
But you know what? Actions speak louder than words.
There's a sense in which the regulators are powerless.
I keep getting inquiries from listeners, where are the hidden persuaders? Turn on your radio now, because they're on. Let me welcome back to the studio Alan Bonsall, Director of Brand Genetics. Welcome back, Alan.
I've been doing everything I can to tell people it's on at 5:30.
Have you been doing enough?
Obviously not enough, no.
Well, you tell me, you're the one who tells us that word of mouth is the most powerful form of advertising there is.
Yeah, but I'm only one word. Somebody else has to then continue the...
Kristen Devitt is a former journalist and now public relations and communication strategist at KDPR. Welcome back, Kristen.
Thank you, Steve. It's great to be here at this new time slot. And we need to use social media, Alan. We've got to get jiggy with social media to spread the word about hidden persuaders.
Here's a test. Does Alan Bonsall have a Twitter account?
Yes.
Wow.
There you are.
Have you got 7 followers?
I get all your tweets.
You get mine, you poor guy.
I'll tag you tonight.
Which is why I don't use it very often, because I see the quality of stuff that's coming through to me.
Oh, burned.
Did you see that little side eye as
burned.
Well?
Welcome.
Hashtag me too, Steve.
Touché, Christine.
Christine Jackman is here, an old friend, former foreign correspondent and former political strategist and pollster, has come back to Brisbane to be a human being. Welcome back,
yes.
Christine.
I'm very glad to be back.
Can I ask you a question about politics? So sorry to, I know you, it's the first time back this year, first time back to Queensland, all sorts of things. But many of my listeners, Christine, are stunned to discover that the whole question about dual citizenship of our parliamentarians is still dragging on. And I can't repeat the rage that they send through and saying, why doesn't this just get sorted out and so we can just get on with things? So can you speak to, I'm thinking about Susan Lamb, who apparently her legal documents show that she is a British citizen. It's against the Constitution. She's not going. There's a political argument in Canberra.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. When my 11-year-old had a rant about it in the car the other day, and you know when it's filtered down to sort of year six that you have a problem, it's not being resolved because they can't resolve it without changing the Constitution. That's the first problem that they have.
There's this political argument that, you know, will we or won't we have to send it off to the High Court?
Yes.
And the taxpayers are going, why don't we want this? Just do the right thing.
That's exactly right. And I think the damage that it's being done goes to competence. At the very minimum, to have a good government, when you're looking at numbers and people say, well, why aren't we popular? The very first things you look at are that people want to see confidence. And they want to see competence. There's no point being confident if you're not competent. Mm-hmm. But at the moment, we're not really seeing confident leaders anyway. You get that wishy-washy, flip-flopping, we don't stand for anything. But competence is something that tells people that you can actually just run government. They're going to get, you know, they're going to get their, if they get the dole, if they get that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. The road's going to be, you know,
things work.
When you can't run the government, people will switch off immediately. And more than that, what you're seeing at the moment is, as you've said, people are irritable. People are irritable because we all feel busier. We all feel like we're managing a lot more.
Which is probably true.
Yes, absolutely. Services are going offshore. So if you have to fix your Telstra, you have to talk to your phone. Mm-hmm. You have to talk to somebody offshore. You know, and it's harder to get, you know, your day to day life working.
Yeah.
So when your government's not working because people didn't do their paperwork, you're legitimately peed off because you know that if I, for example, back to school at the moment, if I don't put the paperwork in for my kid to go to a particular school, they're not going to have their school books or they might not even be enrolled. Now, if I can do that and I'm a busy person, why can't the government sort those things out.
Kristen Devitt, Alan Bonsall, do you pick up much of this?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and I agree with you, Christine, and my 13-year-old daughter's the same. You know, the news this year, here we go again. Mum, when will it end? And I think there is a fatigue that's set in about the fact that this continues. And I think it goes further as well. There's an accountability and an honesty that people expect from each other, let alone from an elected member of the government.
And in my mind, the public expects them to be public servants. And if they shouldn't be there, they expect them to be sacrificial, resign, yes, have an annoying by-election, and then just get on with it.
Of course.
It's the High Court produces result, but we believe in the rule of law, so we have to do it.
Exactly. And so why are we still having this conjecture about, you know, should the party or the opposition party send that member to the High Court to be... I mean, where's the self-accountability? If there is a doubt, then you stand up and you say, let's look at it. You shouldn't have to rely on somebody else to go and pick that battle for you.
Accuse me of being a cynic, but I just wonder how much of this is the tactic of keeping the bigger picture and the bigger issues off the front page by maintaining the rage against the smaller distractions. And we've seen this a lot in politics over the last few years, where you get a lot of small distractions taking up a lot of space and a lot of time. Now, I don't know whether it's the incompetence of the politicians because they can't solve the bigger problem, so they get stuck in the mire, or whether it's deliberate. And as I said, accuse me of being a cynic, but you can't help but think that there are some of those agendas around. Because I agree with Christina. I totally agree. Competency and confidence are the two critical things that build trust. And trust is missing, it's lacking, it doesn't exist anymore amongst most of the population with our politicians. Or with government, not just politicians. Mm. I mean, it's the whole structure.
Mm.
This is ABC Radio Brisbane. My guests are Alan Bonsall, Kristen Devitt and Christine Jackman. I should mention that we made a request to speak with Susan Lamb, the Labor member for Longman, again today. Sadly not successful. We did try and speak with her yesterday about her matter, but she's a British citizen. Sadly not successful, but she is putting out press releases about museum projects being exciting, which is lovely. But it doesn't answer the question.
It is an exciting project.
Mr. Bonsall would like to declare that he has an interest in the Abbey Museum. So let me give you a chance to say, so what is the Abbey Museum and why is it an exciting project?
The Abbey Museum exists up on the Caboolture Bribie Road, and it's been around for a long time. It actually houses a collection of historical artefacts of medieval heritage, which is worth over $100 million. They are the group that holds the medieval
Abbey Tournament or the Abbey Festival, whatever
it is. Yeah, every year. Mm-hmm. And it's an incredibly successful festival, which brings about 35,000 people over the weekend. They have a plan to build a living museum, which would be basically a medieval...
Village, keep...
All of the things attached with that, and it would then have obviously a place in our tourism markets, it would have a place in our school markets, and so on. What they're trying to do at the moment is get the funding for a feasibility study to make sure that the numbers stack up, and they have a commitment from the local council. They're looking for commitments from the state government and the federal government. The press release that you've got is nothing to do with the feasibility study. It's actually to build a permanent structure so that they can hold different events during the year. That's what it's all about, and it really is a fantastic idea, and it has potential, but it won't get off the ground unless they can find the dollars. And we've been talking to Kate Jones and other people within the state government.
Queensland's Tourism Minister.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to try and see if there are any available funds to help that feasibility study along.
Is anybody else here now wrestling with the image of Alan Bonsall in a codpiece?
Jousting. No, he jousts every week.
That is cruel.
He jousts every week in the studio here. he jousts every week. He slays dragons. He rescues damsels.
So let me tell you the thing, because I went to one of the festivals to get a sense of what is the appeal of this. 35,000 people, if you can picture 35,000 people at a festival, of which I'm guessing, and I don't have the accurate figures, I'm guessing about 70% of those people dress up in medieval costume. It is the most mind-blowing thing, because you turn up in your jeans and your T-shirt, and all of these people around you are dressed as knights, as medieval, you know, peasants, as monks. It's fascinating.
Bring out your name.
And what is even more fascinating is that they invest significant dollars in their costumes for each year.
Yeah.
They spend on next year's costumes. And it is a thriving industry.
Any minute now I'm going to singing Camelot.
No. This radio program is brought to you by the Abbey Museum in Caboolture. I'm Steve Austin.
They're going to love you, Alan. Absolutely love you.
If Tourism Minister Kate Jones has not got the message by now, there is no hope.
Well, all we need is all your listeners to be ringing in saying, yes, go for it.
And that is word of mouth, ladies and gentlemen.
That's word of mouth. There. This is ABC Radio Brisbane. My guests are communications professionals and advertising masterminds, Alan Bonsall, Kristen Devitt and Christine Jackman. Listen, before I move on and ask Alan about the Super Bowl and why there was a very clever advertisement that took place there, I want you to give me your view on whether or not anyone is going to be able to tackle Facebook and reel it in. There is apparently massive soul searching underway all over the place about within Facebook itself as a platform and external Facebook. The Murdoch papers floated an idea last week, which I think is a good one, that if they're going to rip and read copy from news organisations and repost it, they should pay for it. All sorts of things, that they're, because of the fake news problem, because of all the manipulation of their readers, there's even a group of ex-Silicon Valley representatives who helped build Google and Facebook have now joined forces to challenge the company's corrosive effect on society. So has anyone ever can you see anything that says Facebook is going to be able to tackle and reform? Christine and Kristen, I'll come to you. Do either of you have any master plans on this or observations?
Actually, it's a very pertinent topic for me at the moment, because one of the things that I'm researching potentially for my next book is the noise and the static that we have in our lives at the moment. And, the Tristan Harris, who is leading, an ex-Google employee who's leading this push to manage technology, speaks very, very compellingly about how the engineers who run these things, they have no interest. It's not that they're bad people. They have no interest, though, in whether news is fake or otherwise, good or bad. They're governed by numbers, and the algorithms that say, you know, if something works, do more of it. So it doesn't matter what it is. If it's, you know, if you're throwing Christians to the lions and people want to see it, then do more of that. Mm-hmm. It's an ethics-free zone, and that's the problem. That's part of the problem. The other problem that he speaks about is that Facebook's about the economy of attention. It is competing. Any publisher that's online earns money by delivering, you know, people staying on their site for longer. The problem is we all have limited minutes and hours in our day. And why are we all feeling stressed, and why are our kids, you know, struggling with devices? Because there's a bunch of really smart people who are now spending all of their time trying to capture our attention and hold it.
The technology is designed to be addictive.
Absolutely, not apparently. It is. There are plenty of reasons.
They've got top line neuroscience work.
Yes. Yeah, at Stanford University, there are courses in psychological tech design. The ideas are that, and there's plenty about this now. This is not some sort of weird conspiracy theory. That, for example, you feed out stuff like your Facebook likes. If you put something up and you post it and you get lots of people liking it. Tristan Harris has spoken about the fact that they will withhold likes if you post something, because it raises your cortisol level. Your cortisol level is your hormone that controls anxiety. Then they might give you a whole rush of them really quickly. And that gives
you
a rush.
So they give you a cortisol rush.
Yeah, it gives you a dopamine rush, happiness thing. Now, that is the same thing that works on pokies. That's how people get addicted to the pokies. Now, what I've done in my household, which if my children are listening, they're now going to be howling with rage, is bring in screen-free Sunday. It's an experiment.
Hallelujah.
To get no screens. Now, the interesting thing about that is that I noticed how much forget my children, how much I automatically go to my phone. And it's usually, you know, you go to look for something and you get diverted into something else. The amount of time you get back from, you know, from blocking your phone, and there are apps that can do that, is remarkable. But it's also very interesting to observe your own need.
It's a tremendous time waster, isn't it? And like shopping centres and department stores and the pokies, it is designed to make sure you don't see the exit signs. The other thing, of course, it's International Cyberbullying Day today, and it's not just Facebook, but it's all social media platforms that obviously in different ways, shapes and forms are managing our engagement and managing our time. And I think that whole question of how much time people are spending has got to be affecting mental health.
Alan Bonsall, this very panel discussion, The Hidden Persuaders, was named after a journalist who was around in the 1950s, Vance Packard, and he warned way back then that advertising, spin doctors were using science, psychology to get into our brains.
Yep.
And this is, you know,
perfect evidence. But again, it's not illegal to do that. No. It's not illegal from a gambling point of view to do that. It may be unethical and it may not sit well with the conscience of most people.
One of my listeners, Andrew of Benoa, says, so these software engineers are the new hidden persuaders.
Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely.
But we've been... sorry, Andrew. Yep. I mean, that's been an underpinning commentary that we've been making now for some time, that they are the new hidden persuaders. Packard was way in front, but he was right at that time. He's right for this time. Well-used mediums are always going to give you the ability to persuade and to manipulate. And television was doing it for a long time. You know, now we've got a different medium again.
Concern about it is, and this is a concern that, again, is being raised by neuroscientists and others, ethicists, is that this is the first time you think about it, you feel like your phone's been in your life forever. 2007. Ten years now. There is no way. People will tell you, oh, well, it's okay. Kids are growing up with it. The millennials, they've grown up with it. They can deal with it. The brain does not evolve that quickly. It doesn't. And now the changes that we're seeing are happening so quickly that not only can we not keep up ethically in terms of is this good or bad, we don't have the research, we make a decision as to what we're going to use it for. But, you know, our brain has no chance of evolving. That's why there are strong correlations. Nobody's been able to say that anxiety and depression are caused by this. But you can define the beginning of the smartphone use. You can define how many people are using it for long periods of time, like looking at their phone more than sort of 5 hours a day. And then you can put alongside that the levels of anxiety and depression, and you can track how those things are going up side by side.
Now, having said that, we also can't ignore the fact that this is where people are at, and this is where the millennials are at. And so when it comes to getting messages and important, you know, educational messages to young people or people of any age, we must engage. Kids Helpline, a client of mine, uses that to send those messages to young people about you have people available 24/7 to talk to. Mm. If we don't engage in social media, then we aren't communicating with a large
proportion
of the audience.
But this is a fantastic opportunity too.
Yeah.
This is again, though, where we're being let down by the frameworks that are in place to manage it. Now, if somebody said to me, it's all about algorithms, it's all about data, I'd say, wow, fantastic. We want data because you can use data. You can use data very effectively and you can use it for good. If somebody had said to me that the guys who set up Facebook, the guys who set up Amazon, the guys who set up Google, if somebody had said to me they are deliberately using data and algorithms to create something that is negative, I'd have said, wow, hey, hang on a second, we can't afford to have that. I don't believe that they necessarily set out to use data negatively. I think what they identified was that they can use data to build wealth and to build opportunity. But we don't have a regulatory framework, or I don't think we have the understanding to put in place the framework that can then deliver the sort of place that you two are talking about.
Christine Jackman, I learned from Neil Ferguson, the Harvard economics professor, that apparently in the US that the algorithms are being tweaked to block out conservative thinking. Have you come across that in your research? He actually explained why. There was a concern that it was that because of the fake news and the rise of Trump, that there were certain tweaks being made to the algorithm to be more interventionist.
Yes.
In the passing on of right-wing or conservative comments in the United States, this is. Now, that's going to spread everywhere, I'm assuming. Have you come across that?
Yeah, that's not as big a concern as, I mean, the interesting thing is it tends not to be the big algorithm impacts and don't tend to be about content. They tend to be about how people engage with content.
Okay.
So, for example, if, as I said, if you're spending more than 3 seconds on something, that piece is going to be fed into your...
So it's actually about keeping you there rather than what you're there reading.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And this is where, by the way, I still am surprised that people don't realise that this is probably only about sort of 5 to 10% of what the people you follow on Facebook put up, you'll see. Mm. It's not... You think that you get to see everything that your friends put up.
Okay. I have to go in just a moment, but I need to give you a chance to comment about one other thing. I can't play it now, but the Dundee fake film trailer that was run in the halftime of the Super Bowl, Alan Bonsall, you think this was a masterstroke of genius. Am I right? Have I framed it correctly?
Well, yeah.
Very clever advertising for Australia.
Just back off on the genius. But, yeah, I think it was a masterstroke, no question. I mean, it's one of those opportunities when you see it work well, it just creates so much mileage. I mean, what they've gained by all of this conversation, by all of the talk around it, you know, they've spent $36 million on a campaign, which obviously hasn't run its full course yet. There's still money to be spent. But they are spending a significant amount of money to get the American audience. Now, we are talking about it. What is happening in the US? Are they talking about it in the US? Because if they're not talking about it in the US, it's a complete furphy. Yes, it was a great campaign, but we need to know now that they're doing what we're doing. We're talking about it. We don't visit our country. We live here.
So if it's not being talked about in the US, it's not a great plan.
Basically.
Right, okay. Yeah.
No, sorry. That's why I said back off on the genius. Okay. I still think it is a really clever campaign, and I think the talk of a movie coming out of that is potentially a real game breaker or game changer. Whether that occurs or not, but it needs to have this sort of mileage for anybody to claim that they've got that extra bang for their buck. And if it's not happening in the US, then they haven't got that.
So basically what's happening here is it's become a PR-driven actually success story versus the advertising, because we're not the target market. Tourism Australia is not marketing to Australians to holiday in Australia.
Absolutely not.
So we are talking about it, as you say, but that is not what the aim of the ad is. If there is a narrative happening in terms of the movie, in terms of wasn't that cheeky, in terms of isn't Hemsworth hot, therefore vis-a-vis aren't all Australian men hot,
We have to go right there.
They will be monitoring that.
Kristen Devitt, Alan Bonsall and Christine Jackman, thank you so much.
Thanks, Steve.
You're with Steve Austin on ABC Radio Brisbane.